Hi everyone, Cynthia Deeren here. Welcome. Our guest episode is supply chain expert Kim Winter, Group Managing Director of the Logistics Executive Group. Now, Kim leads a global consulting, corporate advisory, M&A, executive search, and media organization. Logistics Executive Group has been around since and as of today has a presence in about a dozen countries. Kim is joining us from his base in Dubai. Kim, welcome.
Cynthia, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Shukran.
Have fun. You're in Dubai.
Hey.
And we are delighted that you could come along and join us. Expo 2020 has just finished, even though it's 2022. Ramadan has just ended. What's the vibe on the ground in the UAE just at the moment?
Yeah, well, Cynthia, as you know, and because you've spent many years in this area working with the Australian government, it's been an extremely exciting time of year here. The holy month of Ramadan, of course, just passed, and then last week was the final week. The celebration of the passing of the fast was Eid. So that's traditionally a time a lot of folks are coming back to the Middle East, about a million people probably more out and around the world. And of course, it's the markets and the borders and all the trade lanes been wide open here. Right way through the beginning of COVID, actually. So, but in a word, it's manic. Dubai, as you know, and the UAE are trading hubs, and there's been an amazing amount of activity here all the way through the last 2 years in particular.
And so for you sitting there at the moment, does it feel as though you're in the post-pandemic phase?
Well, as I mentioned, things have been full on here all the way through. The government here in the UAE did a fantastic job of reacting very, very quickly and early to locking down for a period of about 3 months, almost by martial law, which was a very, very smart idea. And but then opening up very, very quickly, investing very heavily in vaccine. So everybody was mandated with vaccine, and Emirates, the channels were open, the trading was open. The government was determined not to let the economy sink here, and it didn't. And we've been at the top of the pops in terms of trade, activity, GDP, investment, pricing for property, and a lot of government changes to react, probably not just because of COVID, but I think that was possibly an initiator for many of the smart moves that the government have made here. To increase investment, encourage investment, and encourage longevity of trading here.
So let's talk about supply chain logistics, because that's your area of specialty. You know, as everyone knows, COVID-19 created chaos worldwide over the last couple of years. Delays, massive price hikes, no space on vessels. Can you describe what you saw from your vantage point in Dubai? And can you give us take as a supply chain expert on what that has meant for international trade?
Sure. Well, we're at the epicenter, really, because we're equidistant to most major trading cities in the world. I think within 4 hours you can reach 2/3 of the world, or 5 hours you can reach 2/3 of the world's population from here. And we have DP World, we have KZ, Abu Dhabi ports, we have all the Omani ports around here, but UAE in particular, especially with Emirates and then the other airlines in the region, Etihad and then Qatar down the road, some of the world's premium major carriers from both a sea and air perspective. All of the governments here have seen the requirement and the realization of needing to keep trade lanes open, especially during COVID, when the world, as you say, went mad in terms of online activity, mainly because most people couldn't travel as much, even though I see Emirates, I think, were up to 70 to 80% just this week or just this month in terms of pre-COVID levels, and expecting early next year to be exceeding pre-COVID levels of passenger transport. And I think that's probably the same for cargo as well. So, you know, the UAE has been that hub. It's a gateway to Africa, of course, and it's a gateway from Asia into Europe and from Europe into India, and it's a channel area for so many different lanes. But the bottom line is, because there's so many of the world's populations have had excess capital to spend, government supported, Financial easing during that period, not being able to travel, people have bought, and that's why you've ended up with this issue, albeit probably cyclical, but a very big cycle of high demand for goods online, which has meant that the all of the capacity for sea, the ocean carriers, the likes of Maersk, CMA, others, all had capacity issues. And the pricing of containers and moving freight on by sea has been up by five, six, seven times what they were pre-COVID. Air cargo is the same. Capacity has been short, and demand has been long. So this continues, and the profitability of most of the ocean carriers after 30 years of very lean times and losses has been extremely high with massive, massive profits.
And so would you say that the marine cargo industry have been the main winners out of the current crunch in
the last years? So yes, and you just need to go to Google and look at profits for ocean carriers, and you'll see the numbers. I think the likes of Maersk again, which was biggest by capacity until just recently, I think that might have slipped to number two by design, from what I can understand. On their capacity, have moved from up to something close to about a $30 billion profit over the last 12 months. And they've been very vocal and very transparent about where they've been operating, how they've been operating, why their shareholders and their stakeholders are seeing such strong returns. And that's been reflected right across all of the major six or seven ocean carrier groups and alliances across the world. It's high demand, low supply. There's just not enough containers. There's just not enough ships traveling enough directions to cope with what's going on. And that's notwithstanding the fact that there's massive delays because of what's happening in Shanghai at the moment, with the lockdowns causing. You only have to go to Google and look at shipping congestion in Shanghai. You'll see these maps of literally thousands of ships off the coast of China. Then you've got industrial issues such as the labor issues on the west coast of the US, which is causing demurrage. And demurrage, of course, is delay in freight sitting or cargo sitting on ships or on land in a delayed scenario, costing the shippers, the people who are moving the freight themselves, the beneficial cargo owners, not being able to get their freight across. And of course, the end of that means that prices go up for everybody right across the board because the retailer pays more while all of this is going on. Notwithstanding that, then of course, we've got this latest impact of this disastrous situation in Ukraine affecting the world, not only Europe, not only Russia, not only Ukraine, but all of Europe. And of course, that's causing massive, massive supply chain disruption.
What are the major ones that you're seeing out of the Ukraine conflict? Because obviously it's causing the price of energy to spike, and that has a flow-on impact throughout the supply chain. Where are you seeing at the moment?
Sure. Well, one of the things we're seeing is that most Western companies and governments have divested from Russia. So all of the ports across Russia, all of the infrastructure, whether that be aircraft, whether that be ocean, air and ocean, there's been huge divestment there. There's been disruption there because a lot of Western companies have been heavily, heavily investing in Russia over the last couple of decades, of course. One of the main ones we're seeing, you can see this on CNN any night of the week, is that there are millions of tons of a big proportion of the world's wheat and barley and other sunflower oil being disrupted at the port of Odessa, which is blockaded in the Black Sea, which has meant that there's a massive impact now coming to many of the world's countries, especially in Africa, who are very heavily reliant. I think that Ukraine is responsible or grows about 20 or 30% of, including Russia, of the world's grain products. And of course, there's just nothing happening out of Odessa. So there's massive moves being taken place diplomatically at the moment to at least allow the blockade to open so that ships from other flag countries can move those goods forward. I see last night and this morning that a whole lot of grain has been stolen and is appearing in Middle Eastern markets in various places. So massive disruption to that. So food supply chain. So food security, if we come back to the Middle East, the governments, UAE, federal government, and then the Emirati governments, the seven Emirates, have been heavily investing now for several years, many years in fact, on food security here. So you'll be aware from your time here that it's always been an issue. About 90% of all food and beverages imported into the UAE in particular. But the government has been investing billions of dollars. ADQ, Mubadala, the large sovereign fund investment groups here in the UAE at federal level have been investing very, very heavily in food security, food production, to limit the reliance on global markets. We saw that early in the COVID when so much reliance on all sorts of things, not only food, but manufactured goods, masks, vaccines, whatever, on China. And there's been a lot of nearshoring, which is coming closer to you for production of a lot of goods we were relying on before.
So it's a pretty messy picture all in all. And given the level of disruption and chaos that we're seeing going on, how do you think businesses, especially businesses that manufacture things and need to put into the holds of planes or into ships, how should they be thinking and how should they be approaching selling internationally this year in 2022?
Sure. Well, it's a tough one, and of course that's a big question for a big world, and there's many faceted answers. I'm sure we'd have 10 programs on that one, Cynthia. But the bottom line is this major trend I talked about of nearshoring, of bringing manufacturing closer in-house to yourselves. I mean, in Australia, for example, it's often said that, you know, whilst Australia thought it was exporting, you know, over the last 20, 30 years, a lot of its manufacturing offshore to places like China in particular. In fact, it was exporting all the jobs as well. And it was exporting the expertise and the education and the knowledge base. So I think what a lot of organisations and countries and companies are doing now is that they're looking at their resilience issues, their agility issues, which are huge words, of course, in the world of supply chain and logistics, looking at where people can, and organisations and governments themselves, can provide much greater security right across the entire supply chain to deal with the disruptions. And God only knows, we've seen two massive effects of disruption, both from COVID and now the COVID, and what was a very linked and multinational and large global ecosystem world where everybody was interconnected and reliant on each other, and there was so many trade agreements and collaboration arrangements. And of course, now we're seeing, you know, this geopolitical issue in particular, in Eastern Europe, meaning to say that, well, in fact, we can't rely on what was happening before. We need to perhaps rely on a much closer group of colleagues, friends, companies, countries, organisations, suppliers, to deal with what is an exacerbated customer demand at the end of supply chain. And most of the successful companies we deal with, we have about 500 companies globally that we deal with consistently across our range of services. But in my case, from what I'm dealing with heavily at the moment, executive search, what we're seeing is companies realizing they need talent at a senior, very senior level and all the way down into the organization that is agile, that can think on their feet, that can make decisions quickly, that can think laterally, that can apply skills and knowledge bases across borders, across industries, across sectors, across technologies. And in the middle of all of that, in the supply chain, we've seen what was pre-COVID even, a massive, massive drive to digitalization of supply chain, not only driven by e-commerce, which is a major driver, but also the fact that there is always a less and less talent that is capable of providing the sort of leadership guidance and operational activity required in efficient supply chains.
And I'd also hazard a guess that you're going to see more foreign direct investment in markets that people want to sell to. So I certainly know down here in Australia, we've come across a number of companies working in the sustainability space, you know, producing products which do environmental remediation or have eco-friendly packaging that are looking to sell into major markets in Asia and are very seriously looking at actually setting up their own manufacturing operation. So instead of doing a classic exporting play, they will now attack international business from the other direction, which is to actually go into the market they want to sell to, take their technology and set it up and invest in those markets.
Sure. Yeah, and I see that. You know, another. If we flip that right back to your original point about where are people looking at markets and how are companies looking at where they can sell their goods and what have you. What has become extremely important, not only from the talent side and the leadership and the vision and the execution side of business, is also organizations looking where in the world can they expand their markets to. And in your case, being an advisory firm in Australia, I can't help but think, you and I haven't spoken for a long time, but I can't help but think that you'd have a very high demand of Australian organizations, both from a manufacturing, from a primary producer perspective, from a manufactured goods perspective, looking to get advisory about where they can. And organizations with you, such as yours, of course, with the extent of knowledge that you in particular have, working all the way around the world in different trade organizations, both from a government and a private perspective, must need that level of advice, because trade issues are changing, compliance issues are changing. One of our biggest clients at the moment, the executive search, recruiting over 20 people at a very senior level on trade compliance, undoing the onion, if you like, and defragging what all of the new laws are in many countries. I mean, take UAE, for example, they flipped that again and said, listen, we need to make direct foreign investment here a lot easier. We need to issue new visa laws, which they've done virtually by decree. There have been massive changes here from the time of COVID, including golden visas, where, you know, it was used to be a rotational three-year visa here. The government here is both in the federal and Dubai and this emirate are issuing visas where people can stay much longer, they can retire here, they can own land here, which of course was, you know, impossible in the past. So freeing up of legislation, encouraging, making investment encouragement to populations, to companies, to foreign governments, and of course, as you're aware, we hold contracts here with government entities here to attract foreign direct investment, particularly into Abu Dhabi, KZ, Abu Dhabi ports, which is one of the biggest ports in this region.
And if you had to give us a flavour of the transformation that is taking place across the Gulf region at the moment, you know, both in the UAE with things like the weekend moving from Friday, Saturday to Saturday, Sunday to line up the world with the visa scheme opening up that you've mentioned, with people being able to now retire in the UAE, with people now being able to share hotel rooms with people that they're not married to, which wasn't previously the case, with all those other developments and the developments that we're seeing across the border in Saudi Arabia. If you had to just encapsulate in a sentence or two what that transformation looks and feels like, how would you describe it?
The word that comes to mind is tectonic. having been here in the Gulf over 20 years, and having our business established, one of our businesses established here since 2005 under business license to one of the free zones, it has been tectonic. And if we take the UAE with all of the changes, I mean, the move from the Islamic week over the last 2,000 years from Sunday to Thursday, which I really quite enjoyed personally, but the government here saw less than a year ago the advantage of moving to more of a global work week from Monday to Friday. And within a royal decree, and it happened literally within about a week, the leadership saw it. I'm sure they were planning well ahead on this, but made an announcement to say, right, the week is now going to start from Monday. So in some ways, that gives you an extra 20% of trading opportunity with the rest of the world, which I thought was a brilliant idea. And everybody went, wow, that's incredible. Is it that simple? And it was. The rest of the Islamic world still operates from Sunday to Thursday, but the UAE and maybe one or two other places operating Monday to Friday. And it just happened overnight, virtually, for us, and it was fantastic. So that's been really strong. The massive multi-hundreds of billions of dollars worth of investment both here in the UAE and also in Saudi Arabia, with at least 30 multi-billion dollar infrastructure projects taking place there under the leadership of Saudi Arabia, has been tectonic and complete step change, not just an evolution or a gradual change, but a step change up into saying, okay, we need to invest heavily outside of the petrochem area, outside of oil and gas. We need to look at sustainability, sustainable energy, sustainable projects. There's a massive, $100 billion plus Etihad rail project. Rail was never a big issue here because fuel was always so affordable, so everything was trucking and by air. But now, of course, we're seeing massive rail network being built here right throughout the Gulf region, Saudi Arabia, Emirates into Oman, etc. So, yeah, investment is here on a, every country in this region. It's got a 30 to 50 year horizon on investment, as you'll be aware, and they're putting the money where their mouth is. The requirement for talent, again, we flip that back to what does that mean for leadership, execution, vision, business planning and design and development. Right across the supply chain, that means we have literally, and it's cliche to say it, but the narrative actually is in reality that there is a war for talent. And we've never been so busy out of the 22 years we've been in business. We're bringing people from every country in the world virtually into projects inside of the Gulf for development and just maintenance and sustenance, just of the general rotation of workforce at a senior level where we operate.
Exciting times. So, Kim, it's been great having you on the show today. Great to catch up and just hear some updates. I'd love it if you could leave us with some final thoughts for business leaders going global or looking to go global in 2022? What do they need to know? What do they need to do?
Sure. So probably a couple of points. I think it's worthwhile sometimes to take a breath, which has been challenging for us at times, including about 3 o'clock this morning. But, you know, if we look at the leadership here and we look at the government in particular in the UAE and the way that they managed vis-a-vis versus Australia and New Zealand, hate to say it, but the way they managed COVID and the way they got on the front foot, I think there's lessons to be learned there. I mean, still countries, we've got China at the moment still playing lockdown, which, you know, the whole philosophy and the ethos here was we've got to get in amongst it. We've got to keep borders open. We've got to vaccinate people. We've got to live with this. And we did a number of podcasts on this issue, as you may be aware, and live with it and get people as fit and as vaccinated as possible and keep the economy and keep people's economic and mental, social health and wealth in good shape. And I think they've made a fantastic effort to do that. There are many examples around the world, and it's been just cyclical for everywhere around the world. But I think that's one thing, is when you see disruption as a company, as a leader, as a country, if you see disruption, get the brightest minds you possibly can from everywhere in the world together as quickly as possible and look to react, come up with a plan, and then execute quickly. And that's common business planning, and I'm sure you give that sort of advice to many of your customers around the world as well. From the other lesson is very much legislate and make step and tectonic changes to your laws, to your compliance conditions, to your social standards. We're required to ease the situation when you've got major disruption so that people can get on and can work and can trade and can generate economic activity. Because at the end of the day, the base of social, mental and economic wealth and sustainability is the ability for transactions to take place and for people to be able to converse and execute across economic channels. So that's been very, very important. And I think if we take examples from some of the major carriers, and we talked a lot about ocean before, carrying most, say 90% of the goods that are transported around the world go by sea. But even the air carriers, look to cut your cloth to fit the requirement of your customer, literally, and make sure you bring in capacity, make sure you bring the talent to bear. I mean, a classic example in the area of ocean is the way that Maersk, the biggest shipping company and now one of the biggest logistics companies, because they've got this massive, incredible strategy of going right across supply chain. So as an integrated logistics company, both from an air perspective, they launched Maersk Air Cargo recently, buying hundreds of aircraft over the next few years. They've got land acquisitions, both organic and non-organic growth. What they've done is they said, what does the customer want? What does our customer do? They no longer talk about containers, ships, planes, trucks, and warehouses. They talk about the product itself that the customer wants and how they can satisfy that journey and do it effectively and cost effectively and time effectively.
Yeah, that's a great takeaway. Kim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Cynthia. More than happy to join you. Trust all is going well. Good luck with your elections. Very, very close, a couple of weeks away in Australia. And talk again anytime soon if you're available.